Welcome to the first edition of In the Trenches in 2019. We're going to get a chance to review the bowl game. We'll get a chance to talk about what's going to happen spring ball, next football season. But first off is Josh Gattis, new offensive coordinator from Alabama. We'll have him and a whole lot more coming up on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Ultimately, we're going to make sure we put these kids in the best position to be successful. And if we can do that, we're going to put Michigan in the best position to win. And that's our ultimate goal.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
We'll be with Josh Gattis in just a few minutes. New offensive coordinator for the Michigan Wolverines coming up from Alabama. Only spent 1 year there, but revolutionized their offense. Before we get there, let's revolutionize the In the Trenches podcast and bring in, for the first time in 2019, Brian Bush. Brian, how you doing?
Hello, John. Long time no talk,
Happy
my
New
friend.
Year.
What's going on?
Hey, I tell you what, I am fired up, as I can imagine you would think I always am, to talk a little Michigan football. And I can't wait for spring ball to get here. How far away are we? At least, what, 8 weeks, 7 weeks?
We're getting there. Just take it one day at a time.
We're getting close to the point where there's not going to be any football anymore, Brian, and it's starting to hurt a little bit because we're to that point this weekend coming up with the AFC NFC championship games. It's one day. It's only on Sundays. We don't have Saturday football anymore. Then we've got the Pro Bowl. Then we've got the Super Bowl. And then there's this mourning period between the Super Bowl and the start of spring football. But that's still a few weeks away. And you know what the great thing is, Brian? Is we no longer have to wait to be excited about something because we've got Michigan basketball. We're going to be 18-0 on Saturday against the Wisconsin Badgers going to Madison. So I'm excited about that too.
Well, we're going to get into the NFL playoffs. We're going to get into Michigan basketball. But let's start, as John, you always say, there is no offseason in football, even though there is a bit of a wait for games. And this was a big time week for Michigan football, landing Josh Gattis. You'll have a great interview with him later on in the podcast. But I want you to give fans an impression, your impression of him and his past experience, what he can bring here as we start off 7 from 77.
Well, when Josh came to Ann Arbor, he came here last weekend, and I really like the fact that he's a former player. He's a guy who played on the defensive side of things. He was a safety at Wake Forest, played in the NFL for a brief moment with Jacksonville, and then for another year with the Chicago Bears. So he's a Midwest guy. He understands what it takes to play football in the Midwest. When you get into November and you got to be able to run the football, he understands all of those things. And one of the things, I'm gonna let you guys in on a quick insight. We're going to have him coming up as an interview. But when he talks about balance on offense, I want you guys to pay close attention to when he talks about balance, because most people think it's exactly that. It's running 50% of the time and throwing 50% of the time. That's not the case. Josh Gattis is a guy who understands that you've got to be able to run the ball when you need to run the ball. When you want to throw the ball and you need to throw the ball, you have to be able to do that as well. That's what he means by balance, and he does a great job of describing that. But here's a coach who has coached at Western Michigan, Vanderbilt, Penn State, Alabama, Michigan. He's coached some of the greatest stops that you would want as a college football coach. And he's been able to learn from some of the great football coaches of our generation. Coming from Alabama, coming from the Nick Saban tree now, he spent 1 year there. And I'm really excited about the creativity that he has on offense. When you look at that Alabama offense from last year, it wasn't your typical, Roll Tide Alabama offense. They didn't just hand the ball off and expect their defense to do big things for them. This was an offense that was in attack mode all season long. They took shots down the field, and yes, they had Tua Tagovailoa, but they also had Jerry Jeudy, one of the wide receivers, who did a great job of getting open. The routes that they ran, the combinations that they ran, all came, especially from the receivers. Josh Gattis was the receivers coach as well. So I'm excited about what he did with that receiving core, what he was able to do with that offense, the things that he may have learned there in terms of working with Mike Locksley, working with Nick Saban, bringing those to Ann Arbor. All of those things excite me a great deal. So it's going to be fun spring football. It'll be a fun winter, and to see how he integrates that into this Michigan offense.
Number two on seven from 77, much is made outside the program of the offensive responsibilities for the coaching staff. Who calls plays? Who's the coordinator? Who are all the individuals involved in the process of getting a team ready to go offensively for the Wolverines on game day? So what do you think this hire will do to change things up on what has been the case for this offense and for this coaching staff alignment offensively?
Well, I think it streamlines things quite a bit. You're going to have an offensive coordinator, Josh Gattis, who's going to call plays. He's going to be the guy that pulls the trigger on this. And as with any head coach has veto power over the offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator. That is because they are, by definition, the guy that makes the decision, and they're going to have to live and die with the decisions that they make. Their job depends on that, as well as the coordinator. So, you know, when it comes down to it, Jim Harbaugh will always have final say. And how he delegates things is still a little bit left to be determined. But as I understand it, Josh Gattis is going to be calling the plays. He's going to do what he needs to do to get this offense integrated into his ideas. Also taking a look at what this offense has done extremely well and integrating that into what he wants to continue, what Michigan has done. It's not going to be a wholesale change. We're not just getting rid of everything and then putting this other offense in place. There's going to be a meshing, a melding of these two offenses into what we're going to see in 2019. And that's not that different from any regular offseason. Yes, we have a coaching change. Yes, we do have a named offensive coordinator this year. But when you have guys like Ed Warner, when you guys have guys like Jim Harbaugh, and now Josh Gattis, putting their minds together and putting an offense of what they see their talent being in 2019 at receiver, at offensive line. And then they start to pare down their playbook and say, okay, I think these things are going to be what we can do best in 2019. They'll get a look at it in spring ball. And some of those things will be right. Some of them will be wrong. And they'll you know, change up the combination. They'll change up some things. Then when we get to you know, summer and fall camp, all of a sudden they'll start to really hone in on exactly what this offense will be able to do from a coaching standpoint, from a player execution standpoint, from a talent standpoint. There's a lot to be done between now and when this season kicks off next year.
Number three on seven from 77. There have been a few other staff changes on Jim Harbaugh's staff here for 2019. Greg Madison and Al Washington heading to Columbus. Anthony Campanelli added to the defensive staff. Your thoughts on all of those moves?
Well, it's disappointing, obviously, to lose a friend. And Al Washington, I count him as a friend, as well as Greg Madison. I've counted him as a friend since I was being recruited out of high school. When I was an 18-year-old kid, he was at Michigan. And I got to tell you a quick story, and this involves Coach Madison, one of the guys I respect most in the business of football. And this may surprise some people, but when he left the first time to go to Notre Dame, as an emotional football player, I didn't understand that, and I was pretty upset. I was somewhat vocal about it as well. Then I had a chance to get into the NFL, and I saw a little bit more after a couple of free agent off seasons, how you start rooting for individuals. And it's a little bit easier in the NFL because there's not as much passion, there's not as much loyalty to a single team, but you start rooting for individuals. And you also see in the coaching ranks that the guy, like Scott Frost at Nebraska, if he were to go coach at, say, Oklahoma, there would be a big problem with that. If Jim Harbaugh were to take the job down in Columbus, yes, I think we would all have an issue with that. But when you see assistants like Greg Madison or Al Washington go to Ohio State and go to Columbus, do we want to lose great coaches to Ohio State? No, we don't. But that is a career move for these two men. And so am I upset? I'm disappointed because my friends won't be here anymore, but there's nothing sweeter than lining up across from a friend and kicking their tail. And so that is one thing that I'm looking forward to at the end of November, is to line up across from a few Buckeyes and kicking the tail out of some guys that I do have a lot of respect for.
Number four. Now, as you know, coaching changes happen a great deal. I'm curious about how those introductions in the early stages of the relationship for a new coach, whether it's a head coach, an assistant coach, position coach, whatever it might be, with players. How did you grow with your relationships with new coaches when they came in, whether it was at Michigan, when you were in the NFL, or even all the way back to high school?
Fortunately for me, when I was at Michigan, we did have a coaching change, but we didn't bring somebody in from outside. So, you know, when Coach Carr took over, he had a base of knowledge for the guys that were recruited, the guys that were on the team already, as to what type of kids they were, what they were good at, how hard they were working, what they were doing in school. You know, there was a base of knowledge in that. When I went to the NFL, I had six different coaches in 10 years, with each of those coaches came a new offensive line coach, came a new offensive coordinator, and sometimes even in the middle of one coach being there, you'd get a new offensive coordinator or a new line coach. And at no matter at what level you're at, the first thing that happens when you get a new coach is, does this coach like me? What do I have to do to prove to him that I can still play, that I should be the starter? And you know, if you get a chance for two things: one, to continue to prove yourself, but there's also a fresh slate. There's a clean slate. Most coaches will come in and say, you know what? Hey, there's 10 guys on this offensive line, and there's five spots to be named. I don't know, you know, one of you guys from anybody else. You just need to go out there and play hard, and I will put you where I think you need to be. That can be scary if you're a guy that started for a couple years, but it can also be a great motivator and very freeing if there was something that, you know, maybe you were trying to escape in terms of, hey, maybe I didn't pass protect well 2 years ago and a coach had been holding that against me, but now all of a sudden I've got a fresh slate. I can go out there and perform at a high level, and that's all this new coach knows. So, you know, there's a lot of that, but the one thing that a player will always think about when there is a coaching change is, how do I prove myself? How do I get on the field? How do I, you know, continue a route of successfulness?
Number five, we haven't spoken on an episode since the national championship game, and Clemson takes down Alabama in dominant fashion. What can Michigan learn from what the Tigers have done? Because they've really gotten to a point where it's Clemson and Alabama, and then there's a gap from everybody else. So what can the Wolverines learn from really those two programs, but in particular Clemson, one that maybe people didn't see coming out of that next group down into Alabama's class like they have?
Well, I think one of the things that you look at is when you start to build a program, which was Dabo Sweeney did when he came to Clemson, he basically had to rebuild a program, and he did that by winning the line of scrimmage and recruiting offensive and defensive linemen. And that's what Nick Saban did when he went to LSU. That's what he did when he went to Alabama. That's what Bo did when he came to Michigan. That's what Lloyd has done. And that's what Jim Harbaugh is continuing to try and do. We've got six offensive linemen coming in this recruiting class. And that, when I look at teams that are continually successful, they win at the line of scrimmage. And when you look, and the reason, and I actually picked Clemson to win this game, because when I see the front seven on defense for Clemson, and you got guys like Christian Wilkins, and the dominant player that he is, and I had a chance to talk to him, and I had a chance to get to know him a little bit. This is a guy that graduated in 2.5 years. He's got a master's degree. He's a smart individual. He understands, you know, much more than just football. But when you throw defensive concepts at him, he gobbles them up, and he understands what his role is, and that he's not always supposed to be the guy that gets the sack or makes the tackle, but why those front seven work together so well to dominate other teams. And that's what I think happened in that national championship game. The defensive front seven for Clemson dominated the line of scrimmage, as well as the offensive line of Clemson. They did a great job of protecting Trevor Lawrence and allowing him time to throw the ball, allowing him time to move around. They did a great job of establishing the run game. It just was a dominating performance all around, but it all centered around the ability to control the line of scrimmage. And when you look 3 years ago, when Clemson won their first national championship, they were able to dominate the line of scrimmage. Why didn't they win last year? Because they didn't even make it to the national championship game because they got manhandled at the line of scrimmage in the semifinals. Now all of a sudden, there's a re-emphasis on controlling that line of scrimmage. Poof, they dominate Alabama. And that's how it will always be in football.
Number six, John, let's transition briefly to Michigan basketball. A school record 17-0 start. They get Wisconsin on Saturday. 1997, of course, you win the national championship with the Wolverines, an undefeated season. My question is, when did people start to talk to you outside the program? Everyone gets excited. They think ahead as fans. I think, oh, man, we have a chance to do this, a chance to go undefeated. What are some of the current players for the Wolverines on the men's basketball side contending with some of those outside discussions and the people coming up to them wanting to ask them, hey, you guys going to do this?
Well, as soon as you do something that's never been done before, like now they're 17-0. The best start at Michigan had always been 16-0. So they are in a territory of starting the college basketball season where no other team in Michigan basketball history has been at 17-0. And so that's when you start to get some questions that nobody's had to answer in terms of how long can you keep this going? What type of pressure do you feel? Why are you guys more successful than last year at this point? And I think one of the great things when you listen to Charles Matthews or Jordan Poole or Iggy Bristakis, when you listen to those guys talk, they're not talking about how great they are or how much better they are than they were last year. They're talking about how maybe they have a little more toughness than they had last season, how they're able to play maybe a little bit better defense than they did last year, which is why they are 17-0. And when you start to gather some of that information and you start to hear what they're talking about, and then you hear Coach Beilein and you know him talking about, yeah, we're just trying to get better every week. I remember back in 97 when Coach Carr at about the halfway mark, because we were in a position at that time where, yes, we had been 5-0 before, we had been 6-0 before, but we had never been 11-0 at the end of the football season. And there's a point where the coach has to answer questions like, do you think this team could win a national championship? Well, you know, behind closed doors, yeah, I guarantee you Coach Beilein has a way mapped out in his mind where this team can win a national championship. Coach Carr had that mapped out. Nick Saban has had that mapped out. Dabo Sweeney has had that mapped out. Tom Izzo has had that mapped out. And yes, they believe that their guys can win a national championship. But it's a matter of getting them to stay focused on Wisconsin on Saturday, to get them to stay focused on Minnesota next week, at Indiana, when Ohio State comes in another 10 days after that. There are a number of things that coaches in basketball, and the season's a lot longer in basketball, at least you have more games, where night in, night out, where you've got to get guys to refocus, continue to play at a high level, that the challenge is always there. And the bullseye continues to get bigger and bigger. So what you have to do is when you play Northwestern for the second time, and the biggest challenge that they had up to this point was at Evanston, at Northwestern, where they won 62-60. Now all of a sudden, people want to say, well, oh, Northwestern's coming to Chrysler Arena. Is this possibly going to be how you guys lose this streak? And then you answer it with a 20-point victory over Northwestern. You say, you know what? We turn that 2 points into 20 points because you're at Chrysler Arena, because we're better than we were a month ago. And that's how Michigan basketball is going to continue to improve, how they're going to be able to stay the course, how they're going to play Wisconsin this weekend and continue to improve. And this is exactly what a Coach Beilein team does. They get better and better. It's just the fact that this year they've been able to start off awfully good. Just imagine what they're going to be like when we get to March.
It's crazy. It's scary. I mean, this team, really, really special. John, I think you're ready to go. I think you could probably give Coach Beilein some minutes at the five.
I am ready. If you're talking about playing for Michigan, I don't care what type of sport it is. I'll go golf for him. I'll go play a little basketball. I'll bowl. I don't care what the sport is. I'll even swim. I tell you what. I'll go out there. I'll do a couple of handstands off the diving board and a couple of flips just to see if I can help Michigan win.
Oh, please. Can we arrange that, please?
First of all, you don't want to see me in a swimsuit.
Oh, it would be worth it to see you try to do some handstands and stuff on a diving board.
Hey, don't think it can't be done. Jeez.
I'm calling you out.
Come to Ann Arbor. Let's go.
Number seven, John. Give me your predictions for the rest of the NFL playoffs.
Tom Brady, Michigan man, another Super Bowl championship. I do believe that New England will get to the Super Bowl. However, I hate to tell our Wolverine fans, I think New Orleans has the best team in the NFL right now. I think they're the most well-rounded. But I think that Tom Brady is a guy that continues, and for young players, and I don't care if you're young, if you're old, watch Tom Brady when he plays, because everybody talks about how, you know, you've got to have talent at receiver, you got to have talent on the offensive line, you got to have talent at all these different places. Well, Tom doesn't always have talent at those places. He doesn't have the greatest talent. Because you got to be good to be in the NFL. He has some talent there. But he gets his guys, especially at this time of year, to play at an extremely high level because they want to win a Super Bowl. They believe Tom can make anything happen, as all of us should believe at this point with five Super Bowl victories. When you have a guy that can make dreams come true, you go out there when everything's on the line and you play extremely hard. And that's why it's so hard at this time of year for anybody not to pick Tom Brady to win another Super Bowl. Do I think it's going to happen this year? No. But do I think he's going to make it interesting? Do I think he's going to make it close? Do I think he could win it? You better believe it. But I think it's going to come down to – I think the Super Bowl champ comes out of the NFC this year, whether it's the Rams or the Saints. I think this weekend is going to be a great matchup. Todd Gurley is one of the best running backs we've seen in a long time in this NFL. Jared Goff at quarterback for the Rams. McVay is one of the guys that, you know, everybody's trying to replicate what they're doing in and I keep wanting to say St. Louis, but in L.A. With the Rams. But this is a team that's got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent defensively. I just think that when it comes down to it in this NFC Championship game, Drew Brees, the talent he has on offense, the way they've played as a team, they win the NFC. They end up winning the Super Bowl.
Gurley, Brees, Mahomes, Brady, awesome stars on display. I'm gonna predict Tom Brady to win the Super Bowl MVP the year after he retires. We'll get into Josh Gattis here momentarily. My last thought to you. I couldn't believe how many people were counting him and the Patriots out. Like, haven't we seen this before?
I mean, every year people are talking about, oh, Tom is old. He can't do it anymore. And I made the comment to a friend this past weekend. When you see Tom go out there and continue to move his team down the field, continue to motivate his guys, you can't bet against that guy this time of year. He's a motivator. He's a leader. The reason he's won five Super Bowls is because he gets his guys to play hard when it counts the most. And I love that about Tom. I absolutely love it because it's an example too. I mean, people in Detroit here, you know, we're talking about our quarterback position, and yes, we've got a talented quarterback in Matt Stafford, but you've got, when you get to, you know, big time divisional games, when you get to the fourth quarter, when you get to the playoffs, you've got to get your guys as a leader of men to play at another level, to play extremely hard, extremely well, and to go out and find a way to win. And he hasn't done that. But Tom continues to do that year in and year out. He finds a way to win, finds guys that have that same will. They may not be the best players, but they are great when it comes time to find a way to win.
Tom Brady on the football field, John Jansen on the diving board, finding ways to win.
That's right. I did. Hey, we're trying to find another way to win because we've got Josh Gattis at offensive coordinator, and I'm excited. I'm excited about him, seeing him on the field this spring. I'm excited about seeing him under the headset, calling plays next fall. But before that happens, let's take a chance to introduce our fans to Josh Gattis. I am pleased to be joined by new offensive coordinator Josh Gattis. Josh, welcome to Ann Arbor.
Thank you, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. My family's excited to be here. This is an amazing opportunity to join such a prestigious program, rich with tradition and history. And we couldn't be more excited to be part of the Michigan football family.
This all, you know, seemed to come out of nowhere. I know that you were looking to, you know, part ways with Alabama. There was some talk about you going to Maryland with Coach Locksley, some talk about, you know, returning to Penn State, which you were at. Then you end up here at Michigan. How did it all work out for you?
It was a crazy week. It was a week full of emotions, obviously, just previously playing in the national championship game last Monday. And then after the game didn't go the way we wanted it. Had a bunch of opportunities, a lot of teams reaching out, of interest of trying to hire me, you know, to be on their staff as an offensive coordinator. So I was blessed at the same time to have a lot of opportunities to choose from. But when this opportunity came open and Coach Harbaugh reached out, it was a no-brainer in my mind. You know, obviously my history and past being here in the Big Ten, the familiarity with the region and the program, this was just an opportunity that was a prized opportunity. And when I got the phone call, I couldn't be more thankful for the opportunity he's given me and my family, and I look forward to being a part of this family.
And for our listeners who don't know, you were in the Big Ten as a member of the Penn State coaching staff with Coach Franklin. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Correct.
And when you – so I there's so much that we've got to cover and let our fans know. Not only are you – you know, have been in the Big Ten as a coach, but you were in the ACC as a football player. Let's go back to – is it Wake Forest, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
And don't call me sir anymore.
I'm from the South now. That's part of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but you and I played in the league at the same time,
that's
so I'm
it.
Not that
did,
much
yeah.
older than you. When you look at your time as a player in college and then you played in the NFL for a little bit, is there how much influence does your time as a player have on what you do now as a coach?
Oh, tremendous impact. I mean, the influence that, you know, created me as a coach, are some of the past experiences I had as a player, my relationships with my coaches and how those guys pushed me and developed me and cared for me. I still, to this day, I got a text message the other day from Jim Grobe. You know, I still talk to my position coach, who's the linebackers coach at the University of Kentucky, a guy named Dean Hood. So, those guys really molded me into the person I was as a player, but helped mold me into the man I am today. And oftentimes, you know, I reach back to, you know, some of the past experience I had as a player. I've been under some great coaches, even playing under Lovie Smith, you know, in the NFL, and being around guys like that. And then also coaching, you know, under some great coaches from Butch Davis to James Franklin to Nick Saban. You know, being a part of programs like that where you're able to pull pieces, and Bill Cubitt here at Western Michigan. So I was able to gain a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience on the go, but it's been unique. You know, I think every head coach or in every situation that I've been a part of has all been different, and they've helped shape me to be the coach that I am today. And I'm very thankful for all my past opportunities and all the past experiences I had.
And I was going to say, this has been about a 10-year process that you've been in the coaching ranks so far, and you've had a hell of a run of being on some staffs. When you look back at all the – and you just named all the coaches that you've coached with. Is there anything that while you're there you say, okay, I want to try and learn this from this coach? Right. Or how do you take what they bring to the game and meld it into how you see offenses or defenses being run?
Yeah, I think I think every experience is different. I think you kind of want to go into each experience and kind of dive in and learn as much as possible. It's funny because when I first got into this coaching profession, my first opportunity was at University of North Carolina under Butch Davis. You know, I had never coached wide receivers before. I never played wide receiver. So, it was an opportunity for me to go in and just dive in and learn. I initially accepted my first job thinking, well, it's going to help me one day be a better defensive coordinator because I was a safety in my playing days. And I said, you know, I'll go in and learn protections, learn pass concepts, learn run game. But I didn't realize that I was going to fall in love with the offensive side of football. You know, and I think it allowed me to bring a unique perspective that, you know, from a defensive background, I was able to understand what defenses are trying to do and how to attack them, whether that's by coverage or you know, fronts and everything. So I think a lot of my past experience as a defensive player allowed me to have success, early on in my career as an offensive coach. But each experience has been different. You know, I've been blessed in my career to be around some of the best and brightest coaches, not only from an overall program standpoint, but even offensively being around some of the bright guys that I've been around. And, you know, Mike Locksley, Joe Moorhead, Bill Cubitt, those guys are some of, you know, what I consider some of the most dynamic offensive coaches and offensive-minded coaches that I've ever been around. So I've always, you know, at each stop, I've always grabbed just a little bit of information to continue to prepare me in my career, things that I still lean back on, you know, some of the base principles and values that I believe in as a coach, you know, I've gained from each and every one of those coaches. So it's been an awesome journey. I'm thankful for all the past experiences. Like I said, you know, each and every one of those men shaped me, and they're very important part in my journey as a coach, and I'm excited to be here now.
And you answered probably my next question early on by how does a defensive guy end up on the offensive side of the ball? I mean, you just it doesn't seem that it'd be like me going to coach on the defensive line. It just doesn't seem to happen that often. But when you have guys like, you know, Jordan White and Jordan Matthews, who you coached earlier in your career, we all saw Judy this past year and the ability of him to get open and run routes and everything that you've done as a wide receiver coach. How much do you learn from your players as opposed to them just learning from you?
Yeah, I learn a lot from them. I really do. Each player is different. You know, I'm more of a if you ask my players, they're going to tell you I'm much of a demanding coach. You know, I'm pretty tough on them, pretty hard on them early on. And sometimes they don't quite understand it. But as they get going in the season and as they get going in our relationship, they truly know that I'm hard on them for all the right reasons. And I think that's an experience that dates back to my college days as a player. My position coach, Dean Hood, was hard on me for everything. He demanded that I focus on the little fine details and techniques and fundamentals. And so that's the same thing I demand out of my players. You know, I make sure that they develop a great appreciation for doing the little things right. And that's led to a lot of those guys having success, at the college level. But as a good coach, or one that people consider a good coach, I've had good players. And when they give you 100% buy-in and they're willing to do whatever you ask of them and they're willing to go out there and, you know, bust their tail each and every week and play hard for you, that's rewarding as a coach because that's all you can ask for. And so, you know, I take great pride in pushing those guys to be the best that they can be each and every day.
You spent last year at Alabama, and it was an Alabama offense that, in my opinion, was much different than they had at Alabama in some time. And some of that is due to Tua Tagovailoa, being out on the field. But a lot of it has to do, I think, with the turnover that Nick Saban had in the coaching staff, bringing in Mike Locksley and giving him coordinator duties, bringing yourself in. When you're amongst a staff like that, how do you have a voice? And with Coach Saban, how do you – exert what you want to see done on the offensive side of the ball?
I think, you know, first it started with the chemistry that we had as an offensive coaching staff. I think, you know, we had a room where we didn't have any egos. You know, we had a number of different guys from different backgrounds. You know, I was coming from a spread background with Joe Moorhead. Mike Locksley had a previous spread background. You know, Dan Enos, our quarterback's coach, he was more of a pro style background. And, you know, we had a bunch of guys in that room that, you know, were willing to put the team first and the offense first to really accomplish our goals. And, you know, when we first took over the offense, there was a lot that we changed, you know, from a schematic standpoint, just being able to allow our athletes to get the ball out in space. And, you know, that was something that, you know, we took tremendous pride in, building the offense around our players and building around our personnel, not just saying, hey, we're going to go in here and run the same offense that Alabama's been running for the past 20 years because it's always worked. But we adapted it. And, you know, Coach Locksley, being the offensive coordinator, I think, you know, he did a tremendous job of allowing everyone to have input and allowing everyone to have a fingerprint. And he did a tremendous job of, you know, calling plays and developing the game plan each and every week to put our guys to be in position to be successful. So, you know, it was a good time there. You know, we had a great offensive staff. We had great players. But I think when you look at the fingerprint that we were able to leave on that program and on that offense, we really changed the narrative about Alabama's offense. And that's one that I'm looking forward to doing here at the University of Michigan.
I was going to ask you, that fingerprint, how much of that fingerprint can you put on this Michigan football team? I know you've only been here a couple of days, but first of all, let's answer that one. What type of fingerprint can you put on this offense?
I'm pretty confident in the fingerprint that we're going to be able to leave, and we're going to do it together. This isn't going to be about, you know, Josh Gattis's offense, or this is going to be about Michigan's offense. You know, the best teams that I've been around are all player-led teams. You know, they're player-driven, and so it's going to be a fun, exciting brand. Obviously, the fingerprint that you saw at the University of Alabama, what we were able to do with incorporating some of the RPOs and some of the spread system, you're going to see a lot of that, you know, show up here at the University of Michigan. But it's going to be about the buy-in of our guys. You know, it's going to be a total new offense. There's going to be some carryover as far as terminology maybe or concepts. I mean, football's football. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be our job, you know, being the offensive staff here at the University of Michigan, to make sure we're putting our best skill players to be in position to be successful. We're going to be great teachers. We're going to be great developers, but then we're also going to put our players in the best position to be successful, and that's something that we're going to take tremendous pride on as an offensive staff.
Have you had much of an opportunity to watch much film yet, or did you watch any film while you're making the decision to come to Michigan?
You know, I didn't watch any film. You know, I talked to, you know, quite a few guys on staff. I've talked to a few players. You know, I'm looking forward to diving into the film. It's going to kind of help me get a little bit more of a background on these guys. But, you know, all the pieces are here. You know, I'm excited, you know, about what we have, the depth that we have coming back at the O-line position, the depth that we have at tight end. You know, obviously our quarterback position, our quarterback room is very talented. And then also we have good skill in our running backs and receivers. So, you know, I truly believe we have all the pieces we need to put this puzzle together. And, you know, it's going to be a group deal. It's going to be a group effort. You know, it's going to come with some hard work, some belief and trust in this offensive coaching staff and the plan that we're going to put in place for them. But ultimately, we're going to make sure we put these kids in the best position to be successful. And if we can do that, we're going to put Michigan in the best position to win. And that's our ultimate goal.
When you bring the concepts and ideas that you have, and you talk about the fingerprint you had at Alabama, at Penn State, and the schools you were at before, how do you look at a roster of players when you come to a new team? Whether it's here or in the NFL, how do you look at that roster and say, okay, this is what I think I can do with my offense, or this is what I think these guys can do? How do you make those two mesh up?
Well, it's not going to be on my offense, and the way I'll describe it, it's going to be our offense. It's going to be adaptable based on our personnel, and that's what we're going to be. We're going to be personnel driven. And, you know, if we've, you know, by the springtime, you know, as we install the overall offense, we're going to have the ability to be spread. We're going to have the ability to line up and play big boy football. Obviously, we're going to put answers on everything to allow our kids to be successful. But, you know, if we've got multiple wide receivers, we're going to find a way, as you know, most most people have heard me, get our speed in space. You know, if we've got tight ends that step up and, you know, those guys can create mismatches in the run game as far as also in the pass game, we're going to be playing in 12 personnel. So we will have the ability to do everything. We're not just going to, you know, be single-minded and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to force our players to do one thing. The neat thing about this offense that I'm bringing is the flexibility among the offense. And that's one of the things that a lot of people saw this past year at the University of Alabama, how well we used our talent. And really, when you look at my track record over the past few years, it's how well we spread the ball around, how much diversity we have on the offensive side. And I think that's what you mean when you want to say you're balanced. It's not just, hey, we're going to be 50-50 run, but we're going to be balanced and run when we need to run. We're going to throw when we need to throw. We're going to be balanced in the number of touches that we distribute, you know, among our playmakers, because ultimately, if we can get our best playmakers the ball, we're going to be in position to be successful.
Now that you're here in Ann Arbor, you know, it's only been a matter of a few days. How do you, just from a living standpoint, how do you make the transition? How do you get the family up here? First of all, wife, kids?
Yes, a wife and two kids. They're okay. Here.
How old are they?
I've got a 4-year-old son, Jace, and I've got a 1-year-old daughter, Reese. And, you know, they're excited. Let me just say this. The hospitality, I've been a lot of places now in college football, but I've never been to a place that have shown me or my family the hospitality that I was able to receive coming here to University of Michigan. From the first day to having, you know, my son and my daughter have jerseys waiting on them and with their last name on it. And that's moments as a coach that is priceless. Those are the moments that I'll forever be thankful and ever remember for the rest of my life, just to see the emotion run through my kids and how excited they were to put on that Michigan jersey and the pride that they had when they wore it. And it almost made me tear up. I mean, it was one of those moments that was you know, it was speechless and breathtaking. So my family is so thrilled to be a part of this community. You know, we've lived in the North a lot of times, so weather doesn't bother us. This is a dream job. I mean, this is, you know, one of the premier jobs in all of college football, and one that I don't take lightly, you know, with the responsibilities I have as the offensive coordinator here at Michigan. This is one that, you know, I feel I've prepared my whole career for, and this is one I'm going to seize the opportunity on. And I'm excited to be here. We got a great coaching staff, obviously led by Coach Harbaugh, to be here with him and to be able to learn from his knowledge and expertise. And so I'm excited about what we have and the opportunity that presents itself. This is one that that you're going to get everything I have, and I couldn't be more pumped to wear that M.
Well, we're excited to have you here. And again, we've got Josh Gattis, new offensive coordinator at the University of Michigan, here on In the Trenches. You know, we talk about you hit the ground running. You know, we walked in this morning together. I had a chance to meet you early on. But where does it go from here? You know, I mean, you're obviously at Schembechler Hall.
Right.
Are you out recruiting? Yeah. How fast does that happen? You know, and then when you get back, how do you make the transition from recruiting to moving here and get your family right here, getting ready for spring ball, putting the offense in? I mean, there's a lot that happens.
Yeah, it's going to be a fast transition. The way to explain it is I'm going to live, breathe, and sleep Michigan football. And, you know, I won't sleep much, you know, but it's exciting. You know, this is what I want. This is, you know, this is the program that, you know, I want to be a part of. And, you know, I got here this weekend. I'm going to, in the office today, trying to handle some things and laying out our schedule as we move forward with installs. And then I'm going to hit the road running tomorrow, get out on the road for the rest of the week recruiting. We'll be back here on weekends and continue in the downtime between, you know, cars, planes, and trains and automobiles, whatever we may need to get out and find the best and brightest athletes across the country. You know, I'm going to be devoting my time, you know, and focus not only to preparing, you know, this upcoming Michigan offense and playbook and installs, but also getting a chance to meet the players. You know, that's important to me because those are the first guys that we have to recruit. We've got to recruit the guys that are on our team and let them know this is an opportunity for us to take full ownership of this offense. And so, you know, I've had a few guys pop in, you know, throughout the day and been texting a few of the guys, and I'm looking forward to meeting all the players. But it's one that we're going to have to juggle. You know, we're going to have to juggle, you know, recruiting. We're going to have to juggle junior days. And, you know, luckily we've got most of our official visits out of the way so far. But, you know, this is the craziness of college football. This is the craziness of this time of the year. But it's an exciting time of year. And I think a lot of people should be excited about the direction we're heading. into Michigan football.
Well, I know I am, and we're excited that you're here. Welcome to Ann Arbor. Welcome to Michigan football, and I can't wait for spring ball, like always.
Can't wait either. There's one person that can't wait more, and that's me. That's it.
Well, I'll meet you on the field.
Absolutely, John. Thank you for having me.
Well, as always, we love to thank our guests because Josh Gattis was just hired this past weekend, flew into town, is getting a chance to meet his players, introduce his family to the Michigan football family, and then is off and running on the recruiting trail. So it was great to get a few minutes with him. We appreciate it. We also sent out a tweet earlier this week to ask about what questions do you have about the Gattis hire. What questions do you have coming out of 2018, going into 2019's football season? Brian, let's take a couple of those questions right now.
Let's do it, John. From a number of people on Twitter, via email, via text, asking, will Josh Gattis call plays? I know it hasn't been explicitly stated, and we won't know for certain until opening weekend, but I know we talked about it earlier. It seems like you're pretty confident it will be Gattis the one calling plays once we get to the 2019 season.
I think so. And I think that, you know, especially after listening to Josh talk, you know, one of the great things, I think one of the great perspectives he has is that he has coached with some tremendous offensive minds. And we have a couple of those on this staff. We've got Jim Harbaugh to name one. We've got Ed Warner to name another. We've got guys with NFL experience. We've got guys that have had, you know, interaction with a lot of college football offenses, a lot of college football players, a lot of NFL talent as well. And Gattis may be calling the plays, but there's going to be an influence from everybody around. And, you know, and like I said before, Jim Harbaugh will always hold the trump card. He is the guy that has to, you know, live with the decisions that are made, whether it's offensively, defensively, special teams. So he'll hold that trump card. But I'm excited to see the influence that Coach Gattis has. And when Coach Gattis starts calling plays, you know, if we can get a little bit of that magic that we saw this past year down in Tuscaloosa, I'm excited about the opportunities we're going to see here in Ann Arbor.
It's pretty amazing with that dynasty in Alabama that he was able to have that big of an influence, along with others, on Alabama's offense. Any unit for them to explode like that, you know he's doing something right. Donnie on Twitter, how do you think the defensive staff will shake out with the departures of Coach Madison and Coach Washington?
Well, when it comes down to it, again, this is Don Brown's offense. And I don't know if Donnie, the guy who sent this question in, maybe this is Don Brown. We don't know. You know, maybe he's got an avatar that we don't know about, and this is his Twitter handle. But, Don, I think that when you look at what Don Brown has done, since he's been here, and even before he was here, because he was at Boston College and he had the number one defense in the country, comes to Ann Arbor, number one defense in the country. And yes, there was a lot of talent here, but he brought a coaching staff. He continues to make hires. You know, yes, he inherited Greg Madison, but he brought in Al Washington, who was a guy that he knew from Boston College. He's bringing in Anthony Campanelli, who we'll get a chance to interview and talk to in the next couple of weeks. Introduce our fans to him. When you are a good defensive coach, and I'll say this, when you are a great defensive coach, you need to go out and look for talent, coaches, but that talent sometimes finds you because they want to come and learn from the best. And I think when you look at what this defense is going to do, all the coaches, no matter who is that coach, whether, you know, defensive line, linebackers, safeties, you know, Coach Zordich is the same way. They all get their cues and they all get their motivation from the head man, Don Brown. And when it comes down to it, what he says goes. What he says, players will run through a brick wall for Coach Don Brown. And his coaches will do the same. So I don't see that there's going to be any difference in terms of what's being called or how it's being asserted or what's going with the defensive staff, because Don Brown is still going to be the guy that puts all the pieces of the puzzle together.
Doing some investigative reporting after your comment about Donnie's Twitter, his Twitter handle is @DIsGoBlue, and his profile is Maize and Blue Runs Through My Blood. You might be onto something, John.
I tell you what, Donnie, Hey, back into Donnybrook. I tell you, there's so many things when I hear the name Donnie that come to my Donnie Brasco, Donnybrook. We got a little fight. We got, you know, it's just, this is the East Coast Boston name. You know, that's what Don Brown, Donnie. Let's go.
From investigative journalism to that. That was one heck of a transition there, John. All right.
I probably made a whole lot of people mad.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Nor the last.
No. James and Scott had similar questions on Twitter, and I know fans have been asking this since these two games took place. But what happened in those last two games in your eyes? We talked about this a little bit, but you know, we've had a chance to digest a little bit more. They threw out the ideas. Talent gap, outcoached, other teams figuring out Michigan schemes, something else. You've had some time to think about it, an opportunity to see how the rest of the college football season played out. Where do you sit on those types of topics now versus immediately after?
Well, there's two things. Sometimes when you line up, and I'm referring to the Ohio game, you wouldn't think it would happen in a game like that, but you don't have your A game. And when I watch the defensive line and the lack of pressure that we put on the quarterback, do I think there was a lack of talent there? No. Do I think there was a lack of effort? No. I just don't think they had it that day. Same with the secondary. Same with the linebackers. Same with offensively. I mean, we put up 39 points. Let's not forget that. And yeah, we got some good field position with a special teams play just before half, but we still capitalized that. And we had other opportunities to score points. It wasn't like the opportunities weren't there. And so, yes, at the end of the day, we got an absolute face plant. End of the turf. And we didn't put – I mean, it's like watching my son when he was about 2 years old. He'd run along, all is going well, and all of a sudden he gets to the goal line and he trips. Does he put his arms out? No, he goes right down on his face. And that's exactly what we did. And then when you go to Florida, I think one of the things that I was disappointed of when we hit the Florida game was that we had so many guys. We had more guys than anybody else not playing that game. And I never thought that would happen at Michigan. And it's a decision that each individual guy has to make. Is it right or wrong? No. Would I make that decision? I most certainly would not make that decision to not play in a game. But that's the kind of the world that we live in right now. And when you lose that much talent, it's hard to replace it. You could say, yeah, you know, well, you know, if somebody gets hurt, you got to replace it. Well, yeah, but if you're four of your starters, you know, it's just that's a lot of talent to have to try and replace. So, do I think that we didn't have as much talent? No. Do I think we were outcoached? No. Do I think that we had guys that didn't play well on a given day? Sure. I've been there, and that happens.
Josh on Twitter, how do you see this offense expanding? He says Coach Harbaugh put wrinkles in last year and showed he can adapt. But how much do you think the offense opens up this year with Shea returning and most of the receiving core coming back? You heard from Josh Gattis talking about that a little bit. How do you see this offense evolving?
Well, I see it evolving in that, you know, yes, we have Shea Patterson coming back, but we also have Dylan McCaffrey. We also have Joe Milton. So we've got a lot of competition. We've got a lot of different skill sets at that position that we can utilize. We've also got, you know, a great receiving core. We've got guys that can get downfield, whether it's Nico Collins, Donovan Peoples-Jones, or Tariq Black. We've got guys that can stretch the field. And then you pair that with the fact that we've got people coming in this year that are little bitty receivers that can hit some of those crossing routes, some of those things that we saw Ohio State do to us, you know, in man-to-man coverage. We got some guys now that can hit that speed route across the middle, and we can hit them in a lot of different ways. Plus, we've got a big back coming in Zach Charbonnet. We've got Chris Evans coming back. We've got our offensive line coming back. I think as this offense continues to develop with the introduction of Josh Gattis, and we'll be able to take more shots, be a little bit more aggressive downfield, which is, I think, what all of us want to be able to see. But you've got to have the time at quarterback to be able to do that. You have to have the talent and the arm strength at quarterback to do that. I think all of those pieces are coming together, and this is going to be a very special year with the talent that we have on offense, the experience we have on offense, the coaches that we have on offense. I think this is going to be one of those years where you look back and we go, I see how it all came together.
Now, a lot has gone into discussing the wide receivers, obviously Shea Patterson coming back. Steven wants to ask, what do you see in store for a running game?
Well, I'm excited about it because one of the things that you look at when you bring in a new coordinator is their ability to call and how they call plays. So and how they get to those plays. And so some of the coaches that I'm talking to right now will understand when I say this, and I hope I can say it in a way that makes it clear for everybody else, is when you run an offense, you would obviously love to be able to put guys at that on defense where you want them to be, where you can get great angles to block. So if you're if I'm an offensive tackle, I'm a right tackle, and I want to run outside, I would much rather have my tackle blocked down on a three technique than have them try and reach a wide nine type guy. It's all about advantage angles. And so what you try and do as a coordinator is figure out through motions, through shifts, through personnel groups, how do you get a defense to line up where you want them to line up? And that's one of the things when I watch Josh Gattis and when I think about Ed Warner and my conversations with him, even with Jim Harbaugh, is that they continue to work on how do we get the defense to be where we want them to be, and how do we get the quarterback to call the play that we want him to call if we give him two or three plays to recognize, okay, this play is best against this defense. And when I watch Josh Gattis call plays or put together a game plan at Alabama, that's why I think Alabama's offense was so successful, is because they took advantage of those angles. They took advantage of getting defenses to line up where they wanted them to line up. And, you know, when they got to the national championship game, Clemson said, you know what, we're going to line up where we want to line up. I don't care what you run. We're going to go out there and stop you. And that's what happened. So you kind of see why it can work. And then when you run up against a defense like Clemson, you got to adjust a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see what did Coach Gattis learn from that? What can we do when as they progress so that if we do line up against the Clemson next year, because let's be real. If we want to win a national championship, we're going to have to contend with one of two teams, maybe both. We're going to have to beat Clemson. We're going to have to beat Alabama, because right now, those two programs, those two teams are at the top of the heap. How do we do that? How do we make that happen?
Well, John, you know what they say. Championships are won in the offseason, and this is episode one of 2019. That was an hour of high-quality programming, if I do say so myself.
I would like to think so, but you know what? Hey, there's always room for improvement. When we send out a tweet, and you can follow me at JohnJansen77, send me questions now. Send me questions whenever we send it out, but get involved in the show. I love to answer questions, love to talk to the fans. We're going to have Anthony Campanelli coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're hoping to get Coach Harbaugh on the show here in a couple of weeks. All of that is here to come on future episodes in 2019 of In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. In the Trenches with John Jansen is an exclusive presentation of IMG, America's home for college sports.